This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live.
Hello, and welcome to the Friday Twilight Show. I'm Claire Cannon, and whether you're listening live or have downloaded the podcast, thank you for joining me. This is the first SEND Snapshot Show. Today, looking at EHCP needs assessments with some tips to reduce SENCO workload and using the law to help get requests agreed by your local authority.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live. Tune in live at ttradio.org, or to join in the conversation, download the Podbean app and search Teachers Talk Radio. Follow the hashtag TTRadio. Tune in, talk it out with Teachers Talk Radio.
Good evening, and once again, thank you for joining me for the first SEN Snapshot on Teachers Talk Radio. I'd love to know what you think. This is a little bit of a trial show for me in terms of focusing in on everything SEN. So please do share your thoughts. It'd be lovely to hear what you think. So what we're going to cover today, I mentioned EHCP needs assessments just in the header to the show. But I'm going to look at common experiences with EHCP applications. Absolutely get busting some of the myths around the process and what you can do if you come across some common difficulties. And then moving on to look at the legal tests for needs assessments and, importantly, how you can use those legal tests to reduce your workload. As I say, please do ask questions as we're going along. It'd be lovely to hear from you. So, just before actually we get into all things EHCP applications, I'm just going to start with a little bit about me, and my background is in SEN. So I started out getting a degree in psychology. I was fortunate enough to get a work placement as part of that, which was in a school for children with special educational needs. I didn't really know what I wanted to do until that point. That kind of put me in the direction of travel that I've been on ever since. So to cut a short story, after teacher training and a few years in a classroom with some different roles, I became a SENCO in a middle school. So it's year 5 to 8, just happens to be where I live. We still have the 3-tier system. Before moving on to being a SENCO in a secondary and then assistant head in an SEMH provision. So essentially what I'm saying is, you know, I have been there and I do recognise the challenges, and I see a lot of things on the social media where people are talking about the workload with EHCPs, about things that they're being told that they need to do or asked to fill in, or, you know, reasons why something perhaps can't proceed. So just wanted to unpick a little bit of that this evening. So as I say, I know that there is an ever-increasing need. SEN is not going away, particularly SEMH, pupils presenting with challenging behaviour, which ultimately, you know, it leads to an increased workload for everybody, actually. It's not just the SENCO, it's your teaching staff, it's your teaching assistants, it's your pastoral team, it's all sorts of people around the school. But, you know, today's show is focusing on the EHCP application, so particularly aimed at anyone who is a SENCO or is making those applications. Again, something else that can be tricky is the lack of services, especially when you're trying to get help for children. And, you know, early help, we know that that's vital for them. We don't want to let things go too far before we intervene. But getting hold of CAMS, getting an ed psych booked in your school is really, really tricky. And you're balancing that the whole time with parents who understandably want the support, and actually that's why we're in a job, because we want to support the children too, but quite often parents, you know, growing levels of frustration because they don't know where to get support from or perhaps how to access that support, so they are coming to school as that point of contact, which again, you know, factoring that into workload. So you've got a lot of competing priorities as a SENCO. You've got that increased SEN demand. And quite often it can feel like there's a sort of lack of joined up thinking amongst the external agencies and the people that you're trying to work with. And actually there are ways that we can work together. There are things that we can do to make that process a little bit easier, and I'm going to think about that a little bit later on in the show. So, as we say, one of the biggest things that contributes to Senko workload is these EHCP applications. Now, if you are currently a Senko or have been previously, perhaps you line manage a Senko in your school, or you are a friend or colleague or family member of someone who's a Senko, I'm sure you have heard them talking about very lengthy forms that they need to fill in for EHCP applications. Quite recently, actually, I heard of one school who said it's that they call it the green form. I'm not sure why, but whether it's on green paper or green text, but they call it the green form, and it is 20 pages long. And I thought that's quite an undertaking if you're applying for, you know, even three or four students a year, quite often more than that. Other things that come up, seeking professional input, being asked to do lots of preparation work before you submit the actual EHCP application itself. And that process, you know, getting an EdSite to come out, getting CAMS involved and so on, that also involves a level of paperwork and making those referrals. Other things that contribute to workload are things like proving you've spent a certain amount of money on a pupil. Often I also hear about people being asked to effectively duplicate information because you've got something in your school's format and people are being asked to put it in a different format that's, you know, specific to that organisation or local authority, for example. We'll have a look at all these in a little bit more detail in a few minutes. Where are we at? So another thing that people quite often get told and leads to a lot of frustration, actually, as well as the workload associated, is waiting to hear whether your request has been agreed. You've made your EHCP application, you've submitted it to local authority, you're then in that 6-week period when you're waiting to find out. And quite often you might get a response that says something like the pupil's need is not severe enough, or that you've missed out something from the application, behaviour log, for example. Or maybe you've been told simply it does not meet threshold. Another common reason is that you've not put something in a certain format. As I mentioned before, people being asked to duplicate things, which, you know, workload's got to be a factor here. Now, I said at the beginning I was going to be busting some myths today. So all of the things I've just mentioned, particularly around forms and some local authorities now using online hubs, you actually don't need to fill in those forms. I'm going to say that again, you do not need to fill in those forms. There is no set format for EHCP applications. Yes, I do understand, I've been there myself, where local authorities may tell you that that is their policy. However, their forms or their layout or their online portal or whatever they're using, they're absolutely not a legal requirement. Now, don't worry, if you're wondering, how did I not know this? You are far from alone. The reason actually that I'm doing this show is because I've seen so many people in the last couple of weeks saying, oh my goodness, I've got EHCP applications coming out of my ears. I don't know what to do because there's so much work involved. But actually, the forms are not a legal requirement. And, you know, I could spend ages talking about the training and perhaps making people more aware of these things. You know, I know, again, from my own experience, that it's something that I found out about on the job. It wasn't something that came up particularly while I was doing my Senko course. And unfortunately, it's also not something that your local authority are likely to tell you either. And what I would say is you don't know what you don't know. So if you weren't aware of there being an alternative process to the lengthy forms, don't beat yourself up about it because, you know, how could you know? You don't know, as I say, you don't know what you don't know. So I will come back to these forms and also the notion of not meeting threshold. So after a break to hear from our sponsors, we'll have a think about those in a little more detail.
I've always considered myself to be a caring head teacher who acts sensitively to support staff mental health. But what I found increasingly difficult was managing the negative impact on staff mental health when resolving issues related to their employment or daily work. Heartfelt Leadership has been developed by TeachWell Toolkit as a handbook to support head teachers to overcome the challenges of school improvement while supporting staff well-being. We know that difficult conversations can quickly turn into conflict if procedures are not fully transparent, understood, and followed. Our handbook takes you through step-by-step processes while maintaining mutual respect, avoiding conflict, and finding solutions.
At Bloomsbury Education, we're passionate about supporting teachers with high-quality professional development books from leading experts. Whether you're navigating your first crucial years as an early career teacher or a more experienced teacher looking to refresh your practice or take a step up into leadership, our award-winning books are here to help. We publish practical books to support teaching across primary and secondary, from the very best in research-led practice to trusted advice on inclusivity, behaviour and curriculum design. Visit the Bloomsbury Education website at bloomsbury.com/education to find out more and use code BLOOMTTR24 to save 20% on all education titles. Bloomsbury Education, books for every step of your teaching journey.
Okay, thank you to our sponsors, Heartfelt Leadership and Bloomsbury there. So I said we'd pick up on not meeting the threshold. One of the reasons that is commonly given when you've made an application for an EHCP and unfortunately it has been refused. Now, sometimes you might come across something that's phrased slightly differently, like not meeting criteria, or you know, you haven't met our standards, or the need is not severe enough. But essentially, it's all around the same thing. And I would ask you, have you ever gone back to your local authority and said to them, what is your threshold? Now, the reason I ask that is because they're actually unlikely to be able to tell you, not at least with a legal basis. Now, I have heard reasons given, for example, a pupil with cognition and learning needs, a local authority saying, well, a pupil must be X amount of years behind. You know, if they're 11 years old, they have to be working at the age of a 7-year-old, for example. Or they've used a key stage as a sort of guideline and said, oh, well, if they're in key stage 4, they have to be working back at key stage 2 in order to be eligible. Some will give descriptors for social, emotional, mental health needs, SEMH, saying, for example, that, oh, well, it's been refused because you haven't got an outreach team involved, or you haven't gone to, you know, if you've got a link special school or another provision that you work with. I've also seen for students with speech and language needs, communication needs, schools being asked to get a speech and language therapist involved. I have to say, well done if you found one, because there doesn't seem to be many about. Same with educational psychologist, actually. And the other common one is schools being told you haven't spent £6,000. Again, mythbuster alert here. You do not need to spend £6,000. Neither do you need to complete 2 cycles of assess, plan, do, review or any other amount of cycles. You certainly do not need to have any external involvement, and there is no threshold for a certain amount of years behind or a certain key stage. And what if I said to you, not only are, you know, these myths, they are also unlawful. They are unlawful reasons to decline a needs assessment. So next question, if they are unlawful, do you know what the law actually says? Now, firstly, I do just want to be clear here. I've called it getting an EHCP or an EHCP application, but we shouldn't actually call it that, because what you're applying for is a needs assessment, sometimes known as an EHCNA or ECNA, sort of for short. So what we're focusing on in this show particularly is the needs assessment. You're essentially requesting a second opinion or further information from an external professional. And what they're doing is coming in to understand the strengths, the difficulties, and the provision that that student requires. And the law here is really, really clear. And when I say law, we're referring to the Children and Families Act 2014, quite often referred to as CAFA. This is a public document and it's available online. So if you Google CAFA 2014, you will find it. Now, there's quite a lot to that document. In terms of the EHC needs assessment, we are looking at section 36.8, and I actually don't need to look at my notes to tell you that because I've referred to it so many times. What I do need to look at is the actual wording, which I wouldn't normally read out, but I am actually going to read word for word what it says. So section 36.8, the local authority must secure an EHC needs assessment if the child or young person has or may have special educational needs. The second test is that it may be necessary for special educational provision to be made for the child or young person in accordance with an EHC plan. Now, a huge emphasis there on the word may. Okay, so just to reiterate, the first test, the child or young person has or may have special educational needs. The second one, it may be necessary for provision to be made with an EHCP. So, as the SENCO, this is where your role has a level of professional responsibility. You are essentially the filter. In many ways, you could pretty much apply those two statements to all students in your school. If you're a big school, clearly you're not going to be making applications for all, you know, for a big secondary school, 1,500 students, for example. So as the SENCO, that is your role to be the filter. Now, I would say the same criteria actually apply to parents as well as teachers or any other professionals that may be making the EHCP request. Sometimes I do see online people saying, oh, should I, you know, if it's a parent, they're saying, should I apply myself or should I ask the school to do it for me? Which is going to get the better outcome or which is more likely to get me the needs assessment? And I've seen it the other way around as well, you know, staff saying, should I apply or should I ask the parent to do it? Actually, in the eyes of the law, they are exactly the same. There is no waiting, whether it is the parent or the school or anybody else that makes that application. So just going back to how this law applies to needs assessment requests and those reasons that the local authorities have given, you can see from the fact that it's all about may have SEN and may need additional provision, that all of those reasons around funding, around cycles of assess, plan, do, review, none of them are stipulated in those two legal tests. So that is the sole reason why you can challenge every single one of those refusals or reasons that you're given. It's also why you do not need to put your application on that 20-page green form or whatever it is that your local authority asks you to do. So let's have a little think about the first test in a bit more detail. Now, I know it's, if you're listening live, it's Friday evening, you might think, oh, lots of legal stuff, but I'm going to try and, you know, keep it simple, not use too much technical language, and hopefully, you know, go away, download the podcast, listen to it again, and hopefully it will be helpful. So the first test, the pupil or young person may have SEND. So actually it's important here to think about what actually is SEND. Quite easy to think of examples such as autism, ADHD, dyslexia, the common things that we see in schools. It can also include challenging behaviour. It can also encompass things like EBSA, so emotionally based school avoidance, or similar acronyms that are used. And I would say here that a pupil who's not attending school or who's attending part-time, again, is not a reason for the local authority to refuse assessment. They clearly have a need, actually, if they have a barrier that is so significant that they cannot attend school. The other thing is that an EHCP isn't just about them being in school. And for most students, yes, it's true that it is, but there are cases when something called EOTAS or education other than at school may be more appropriate. And for those students, quite often the EHCP is the portal to getting access to that provision. So, yes, those things, are all types of special needs. But as we're talking law, I'm going to just mention here the legal definition of SEND. And again, going back to CAFA, the Children's and Families Act, this time, section 20. So definition is that a child or young person has special educational needs if he or she has a learning difficulty or disability which calls for special educational provision to be made for him or her. Now, I just want to pick up on the fact there that there is nothing about a formal diagnosis. So again, if you're getting told by your local authority that a student has to either have or be in the process of getting a formal diagnosis, that is also not something that they can use as a valid reason to not give your child a needs assessment. So I'm going to unpick one more thing. So in that definition of SEN, did mention the phrase learning disability. There is also a legal definition of that. So here goes. A child of compulsory school age or a young person has a learning difficulty or disability if they have a significantly greater difficulty in learning than the majority of others the same age, or they have a disability which prevents or hinders him or her from making use of the facilities of a kind generally provided for others of the same age. So I know that is quite a few words, actually, thinking about it for a Friday evening. But what it's all getting at is that this is not about formal diagnosis. This is not about having lots and lots of evidence to prove what you are saying. You as a SENCO or a special needs practitioner, whatever your role is, if you're making an application for a young person or as a parent, you know when there is something that a young person needs additional support with. Now, this sort of bit at the end there about having a greater difficulty in learning or having issues in accessing the facilities actually is quite a nice lead into the second legal test. So just to recap, the second legal test was that a young person may need provision in accordance with an EHCP. So there's all sorts of things here that you've probably already done in your setting. And just to summarise a few that I've seen recently and some that I've used myself. So students with adaptations to their timetable. Again, this can then spread out into all sorts of different things. It could be your student who attends part-time and they've got a phased return planned. It could be the student who perhaps doesn't go to a certain lesson. Maybe they don't go to French or they don't go to PSHRE. And instead they have some time with a pastoral manager or a mental health worker or a mentor, but they have something that's different about their timetable. If we're talking primary, it could be students who perhaps don't go to assembly, but they go and do something like sensory circuits. They've got something that is different about their day. Another thing that's becoming more common is students who have a delayed start, so they miss that main rush when everybody arrives. And perhaps they have something similar at the end of the day, or they have a different method of going out and meeting their parent if they're primary school or whatever it is that's in place for them, you know, if they're at secondary. Other common provisions that you can show meet the legal test for needing provision is access to technology. There's so much stuff out there now, people using touch typing. Some schools now even going with just every student having things like a Chromebook. So they're doing everything digitally, which means you can use dictation, you can change the colour of the font, you can change the colour of the background, you can make things larger, smaller, you know, read aloud. There are so many ways. If you've got students with perhaps sensory, and when I say sensory, I'm talking hearing impairment, visual impairment, you know, they might be using types of assistive technology as well. Just because they've already got it, doesn't mean you shouldn't apply for an EHCP or make that needs assessment request. It may be that, you know, it works for them now, but remember, this is also about planning for their future, not just what's happening today. Okay, right, back to provision. Staffing ratios, particularly in secondary schools, and actually I did see, I can't remember, Tom, if it was you, because I can see you listening, but somebody put something on Twitter or X earlier on saying setting yes or no. Now some schools obviously are setting, and if you've got a student where the recognition and learning needs, you may well have got them in a lower set, perhaps with a teaching assistant or a smaller number of students in the class. So essentially, they're getting a preferential staffing ratio. Anything like that can be included in your application request. If you are using off-site providers, and this might tie in actually to students who've got adaptations to their timetable. So have you got students who are going off to, I don't know, equine therapy for half a day? Or are they accessing, you know, fishing or art therapy, music therapy, something sporty? You know, are they going off-site or are they accessing some kind of external provision? That could also be on-site, but you've got somebody external coming in. So if you've got a therapist that's coming in, or, you know, a mentor that comes in from an outside agency, you can include all of those things. If we start thinking particularly GCSE and A-level, you may have students with exam access arrangements. Again, all things that are part of that young person's provision, all things that can contribute to their needs assessment application. Just a couple of other things here on types of provision. If you're listening live and you've got any others that you want to suggest, please feel free to put them in the chat. But, you know, there are students who struggle with sensory things. It might be, for example, that they don't have to wear a tie, or that they've got a different top that they wear. Headphones. Lots of students now are finding that headphones help with noise, or the little in-ear sort of plug things. Or perhaps you've got students who have exit early passes because they find the busy corridors really tricky. So they may leave 5 minutes early from their lesson. And you might think, you know, why would I put that in a needs assessment? Because it doesn't actually require any funding or additional resource. But what it's doing is building a picture of their need, and putting across that sort of context. And it also helps people understand, you know, the why behind perhaps some of the other things that are a little bit more costly or resource heavy to implement. So we've gone through a couple of things there. The two legal tests for a needs assessment. We've had a think about the types of provision, and we've also had a little look at the definitions. That's quite a lot to think about actually for a Friday evening. So I'm going to give you a little bit of a break while we listen to the news, and then I'm going to come back, have a think about how all of these things can actually help you to reduce your workload.
I've always considered myself to be a caring head teacher who acts sensitively to support staff mental health. But what I found increasingly difficult was managing the negative impact on staff mental health when resolving issues related to their employment or daily work. Heartfelt Leadership has been developed by TeachWell Toolkit as a handbook to support head teachers to overcome the challenges of school improvement while supporting staff well-being. We know that difficult conversations can quickly turn into conflict if procedures are not fully transparent, understood, and followed. Our handbook takes you through step-by-step processes while maintaining mutual respect, avoiding conflict, and finding solutions.
At Bloomsbury Education, we're passionate about supporting teachers with high-quality professional development books from leading experts. Whether you're navigating your first crucial years as an early career teacher, or a more experienced teacher looking to refresh your practice or take a step up into leadership, our award-winning books are here to help. We publish practical books to support teaching across primary and secondary, from the very best in research-led practice to trusted advice on inclusivity, behaviour and curriculum design. Visit the Bloomsbury Education website at bloomsbury.com/education to find out more, and use code BLOOMTTR24 to save 20% on all education titles. Bloomsbury Education, books for every step of your teaching journey.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and this is Teachers Talk Radio News.
BBC News reports that MI5 has briefed vice-chancellors from 24 universities across the UK on the threat from foreign states which could undermine national security. The vice-chancellors were warned that cutting-edge research could be targeted by states seeking to boost their own militaries and economies. The Deputy Prime Minister has also announced a consultation on measures to protect UK universities. There has been no direct reference to any one state, but the government has previously warned that China could be gaining influence in British academic research. The institutions involved in the briefing included Oxford, Cambridge, and Imperial College London. The head of the Russell Group said its members take their national security responsibilities incredibly seriously. The chief executive of Universities UK said the body has worked with government for several years. The latest particular threat could be to academic research that has a potential dual use in civilian and military life. The Guardian features the topic of Ofsted one-word judgments as it appears in the news once again. Reaction to the news features prominently in the article, with primary focus given to the views of Professor Julia Waters, sister of Ruth Perry. Ms. Perry's death following an Ofsted inspection prompted a review of a range of aspects of the inspection process, with one-word judgments a main focus of interest. In a statement published on the 25th of April, the government has ruled that the judgments are here to stay. Professor Waters described the government's response to an inquiry by the Commons Education Committee as woefully inadequate. Teaching unions had backed calls for the scrapping of the single-word judgments and of more radical reform to the inspectorate in England. The announcement came as something of a shock, as days earlier the Sunday Times had published a story suggesting the single word judgment would likely be scrapped. Government have stated that the headline grades provide a succinct and accessible summary for parents, and that they enable government to look at inspection outcomes across England. The statement went on to say they would continue to listen as part of the Big Listen public consultation, although many have criticised the wording of some of the questions, which appear to prevent clear, critical feedback. It seems that funding for education isn't just a hot topic for the UK. The BBC Latin American news site reports on protests in Buenos Aires as thousands of people took to the streets to demand increased funding for public universities. Argentina's president came to office in 2023 and vowed to take a chainsaw to public spending, and justified the cuts by calling the state-run universities centres of socialist indoctrination. Ricardo Gelpi, rector of University of Buenos Aires, says the institution may have to close within 3 months without more funding. Pictures from the demonstration show tens of thousands of protesters dancing, playing instruments and holding banners. The BBC also report on a World Health Organization report which shows that a third of 11-year-olds and more than half of 13-year-olds in England have drunk alcohol. Girls were found to be more likely than boys to be drinking and getting drunk aged 15 in England, Wales and Scotland. The World Health Organization called on countries to introduce more measures to protect children. The report looked at data from 4,500 school-aged children from each country in Europe, Central Asia and Canada between 2021 and 22. The focus was on use of cigarettes, vaping, alcohol and cannabis among adolescents. The UK has always had relatively high alcohol use amongst young people, but it has been declining. On cannabis use, the report found more boys in Scotland had used the drug compared to all other countries. No data was provided for England. Smoking is much less common, but the report confirmed that vaping rates have overtaken it in most countries and are above average in the UK. Full details of the report can be found on the BBC website. Finally, Cambridge University's Fitzwilliam College has apologised to students after housekeeping staff allegedly embarrassed one individual by posting images of their messy room. Pictures of the communal areas and a bedroom were emailed around the college as an illustration of what housekeeping staff don't want to see. But the college has since apologised, saying the inclusion of the image of a bedroom was unacceptable and an invasion of privacy.
Students had also complained that they were being woken up and asked to tidy communal areas too early, although the college says it has stopped this practice in response to feedback. This has been your Teachers Talk Radio News with Jo Fox.
Okay, back to EHCP applications or needs assessment applications this evening. That was just good to hear some of those news articles there. I have to say, I'm glad nobody is taking pictures of my house. Definitely need to get the Hoover out this afternoon or over the weekend. So we've gone through some of the bits around the law, the two legal tests for a needs assessment. And I said, you know, you can use those to really have an impact on your workload. So how do you do it? That's the bit I guess you want to know. So I would suggest, and I have done this, writing a summary letter. So as I said before, you can go on, you go online, you can search for Children's and Families Act, section 36.8. And you can literally copy and paste those two phrases. You can start off with your letter and say, you know, I'm using these two legal principles as the sort of underpinning reason, if you like, or the basis for my letter. In your letter, you then just have to show the information that applies to those two tests. So you've made reference to them. Your first one, remember, was around may have special educational needs. So you've got a paragraph there about the needs of the young person, or bullet points if you find that easier. This is not designed to be a big, onerous, lengthy task. Okay, so you are just summarising the needs of the pupil, a couple of sentences, a couple of bullet points, describing the types of things that they struggle with. The second legal test was around their provision. So again, another paragraph here, something describing what you've got in place for them. We talked through before about things like timetable adaptations or if you've got technology in place and so on. So any of those things that you are doing can go into that paragraph. So just to go through that quickly again, you've got an opening paragraph referencing the Children's and Families Act, because that is the legal basis that underpins your application. Paragraph one, meeting legal test one, which is around the types of needs that the young person has. And then the next paragraph, meeting legal test two, the types of provision, because that legal test is around the fact that they may need an EHCP, an education healthcare plan. What is quite helpful then, sort of to finish off or to wrap up, is to just refer to the legal definition of SEN. So as I said before, that is Children's and Families Act section 20. You can Google that, it will come up. And again, you can copy and paste that in. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with you copying and pasting it, because it is the law. You can quote it word for word. It is just a fact. Now, this letter is not, absolutely not, a covering letter for the form that your local authority provide. It is a replacement. It is instead of that form. Now, I get it, that might feel a little bit difficult. That might be causing you some anxiety, because we are told you need to fill in this form. We are told we will reject your request if you don't fill it in completely every single page. But actually, remember that legal test, there is no stipulation that you use a set pro forma. Now, and I would just ask you to reflect on a point here that I was thinking about the other day. If it was a legal requirement to use a set pro forma, why would every local authority have their own set of forms? Surely if there was a legal requirement to use a set one, we would have the same set form across the whole country. So please, you know, I do get it. I do get that it's, you know, something a little bit different, and doing something against the norm can be quite challenging for us. And obviously, you know, there's an element of fear, I think, that, you know, are we doing something wrong? Are we going to get told off? What happens if we write a letter and then we still get a rejection of refusal to assess? Or perhaps if we had done the proper form, it would have been okay. And I would say to you on that, you know, give it a go. If they were going to refuse because you have missed out a behaviour log, it wouldn't matter whether you'd written it on their form or whether you've written your own letter. All you need to do is put that letter together. And I know I say all you need to do. Once you've done it once, you can reuse. You've effectively made yourself a template and you can keep reusing that document and just replace those bullet points around the needs and the provision, obviously tailored to the individual student. Now, I said earlier on that the legal tests apply regardless of who is making the application. So you can encourage parents to use that format as well. And I have actually known some schools where they have created some kind of template for themselves, are then sharing that with the parents if the parents want to make their own application. So something else that has cropped up when I have talked to a few schools about this before, and again from my own experience, is, you know, the reluctance to send something in without all the extra information we have about young people. Now, again, legally, you don't need to, but I completely understand wanting to send in information that provides context, that provides extra data, and just kind of really does set the scene about the level of need that that young person has. Now, there is a phrase going around at the moment, ordinarily available provision, or OAP. I've taken the liberty of changing that to ordinarily available paperwork. As I say, this letter using the law to underpin your request is around reducing your workload. If you have got attendance data, progress reports, behaviour logs, IEPs that are already in existence, just send them as they are. You don't need to format them into somebody else's template. You don't need to put things in, you know, chronological order from oldest to newest or whichever way round you might have been asked. If the information is there to hand in a format that you use day to day, then that is, you know, use it as it is. Don't duplicate, don't create extra workload for yourself. You've got enough to do as it is. So let's just run through that one more time. You've got your letter. You are underpinning it with the Children's and Families Act, Section 36.8, with your legal tests. You've got a paragraph about need. You've got a paragraph about provision. And then you've got a little summary bit saying, you know, I understand that this is what the legal definition of SEN is. You can then add to that whatever paperwork you decide, but that paperwork should be things you already have on your school systems. If you use things, you know, there are so many packages out there that schools use now, but, you know, they will all be able to run off your attendance report, your progress report, whatever it is that you decide you want to put in. Now, as I say, it can feel quite difficult. It can feel like you're doing something you perhaps shouldn't be doing when you first move away from these forms. And that can feel like actually, oh, it might stop me doing it. So what I would say is imagine that in a way your local authority is a bit like a gatekeeper. And by putting those forms in, they're getting you to do a huge amount of work. You putting that letter in is saying, I know what I'm doing, and you're pushing that gate a little bit. You might get some resistance, so push the gate harder, go back and say, I know I don't need to write on your 20-page form. I know I need to apply under these two legal tests. And I do find my experience is that if you push, if you make it known that you're aware of what the law says and that the law is on your side, you generally will get what you want. It is a little bit of that case of if you kind of shout loudest and longest, you get what it is you want. And it, you know, it shouldn't be that way, but, you know, it is the case. And this letter, writing something short and sharp to the point, it does work. So, as I say, once you've got it, you can then keep reusing that format, and that is what is going to save you time in the long run. So, I'm just going to bring things to a bit of a summary and then close off, because it is actually the start of a bank holiday weekend, raining out of my window, but hopefully it will brighten up, and hopefully wherever you are, you will have a nice weekend. So in summary, there are lots of reasons, we mentioned at the beginning, lots of reasons that local authorities will use to try and refuse an assessment. This £6,000 not involving professionals, telling you that you need to do a certain amount of assess, plan, do, review cycles, they are all unlawful. I cannot reiterate that enough. They are not lawful reasons to refuse your needs assessment. Actually, I didn't mention before, but there are some news reports, actually, I think it's on the BBC, where people have done freedom of information requests and have actually found that in some local authorities, there's over 70, sometimes over 80% of needs assessment requests, when they are initially refused, then get overturned when that decision has been appealed. So don't give up, because, you know, if you, again, if you push that gate hard enough, you are likely to get what you want. So don't, you know, get taken in by those reasons. They are unlawful reasons. You've got the two legal tests that we've mentioned. A young person may have SEN and may need provision in accordance with an EHCP plan. We've then talked about this letter, and, you know, completely get it. There's a lot of information there. So if you're listening, please do download the podcast, listen back, go through it again. The more people, actually, if you are listening back, please share this out, because the more people we can support, not just with workload, but actually challenging these unlawful practices, the better. And ultimately, it's all because what we want is the best outcomes for the young people in our schools. So thank you very much for listening to the first SEND snapshot on Teachers Talk Radio. I hope you have a lovely bank holiday weekend.
You've been listening to Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live and listen back at ttradio.org. We look forward to hearing from you next time on Teachers Talk Radio.